There are some people there that have been harassing me and asking me to fight them, and I try to avoid being there. It doesn't feel safe to me. It also doesn't feel safe because anybody can come in there, and you don't know who you're going to be dealing with. And if you're just there by yourself, it feels vulnerable.
If you're a woman, right?
Yeah, it's particularly if you're a woman, and particularly if your energy level isn't high, particularly if you're people are taking medication, people are disabled. Some people feel very comfortable there, and sometimes I go there and I see people I know, and they're very friendly, and it feels supportive to some extent, but you just never know. You never know what's going to happen. So I avoid being there. But so I ended up just sleeping that day on a bench and trying to stay warm. I was shivering, and they did let me back in to the shelter, which is where I had been when I left to go try to do this child care job.
Talking about the River Street shelter, which is sort of it's not your emergency shelter. There usually is a long waiting list, and you can only be there for a period of 30 days, and then there are a set of rules about you have to be out during the day and you can't be out during the night and things of that sort.
Yeah, you have to be out after the end of chores at 8 a.m. in the morning. You are expected to go look for work or do something during the day. There is a breakfast in the morning, usually cold cereal, sometimes something warm. And then you do have to either call or be back by 6 in the evening. And if you do call and say you won't be back, then you have to be back in by 10 every day of the week, except for Saturday. People can stay out till 12. So, yeah, there's some rules. And you have to be clean and sober, which there are certain rules that preclude people, for example, who have a serious alcoholism or drug problem and can't kick it on their own. They don't really have the option of staying at the shelter. They end up staying at the Armory, which isn't open all year. And then there's the satellite church groups that people can go on, but then there's rules for those also. Basically, people who have untreated alcohol and drug problems, who either haven't been able to find help for them, don't want to, do have to go camp outside in the woods and risk tickets. And I think that's really wrong. I think that's unsafe and dangerous, especially for older alcoholics that could die of hypothermia easily. And I don't condemn people for having problems. I don't condemn people for being in such a state of pain that spending a few dollars to buy some alcohol to feel better looks like their best option. And don't have an option of being indoors to do that, where plenty of people who have quote-unquote lives have places to live, you know, inherited property, or maybe they worked hard when they were young and didn't have anything really bad happen to them, didn't lose everything, they still have some security. Well, they probably get drunk once in a while, probably something bad happens for them, they feel depressed, and maybe they drink or they do something else to make themselves feel better, and then the next day they go back about their business. And that people who don't have much stability or security end up maybe doing that more often because their lives are painful more often. Their lives have less to offer them to make them feel like this is worth staying sober to make this work, because sometimes people try and try and try and it never works. And it's sad, but it's also very sad that there's so little compassion for people. And also, well, one thing I like to say about people's attitudes towards the homeless and toward poor people is I think that we're all being steadily impoverished, and some of us are more aware of it than others. The cost of living going up, wages not going up, our society is deteriorating socially. It looks to me like things are becoming more and more insane, less cohesive, less supportive for everyone. Things are becoming more fragmented, and I think a lot of people who still have homes and jobs and families and community involvement are scared when they see that these things are kind of slipping away from them. And I think there's a denial happening that people will tend to become less compassionate, less caring, less concerned, because they want to see a poor person who's having problems as being different from them, that person has to be different, so this won't happen to me. I'm a good person. Those people must be bad. They must, you know, be evil. They deserve to have this happen to them, so why should I do anything for them? I think that explains people's attitudes. It's my personal opinion, but... and it's also really sad and frightening thing to see happen. Like the song you were playing earlier about, you know, they come for everyone else, but they'll never come for you. People want to think they're never going to come for me. The cops are never going to tell me I can't sit by a dumpster. I'll never be sitting by a dumpster wondering where to go, feeling scared, feeling like I'm not safe, you know, being alone with nobody to call on the phone to say, help me, you know. People don't want to think that could happen to them, but it can fairly easily to a lot of people. And to some of you, it will. And it, you know, I'm hoping it's going to be a little better for you, maybe, if it does come to that for you. But maybe it'll be worse.
Well, Zira, this, interestingly enough, contrasts with your situation of about a year ago. And just to give some kind of background, are you some sort of interloper, some high-profile heroin user who wandered into Santa Cruz to make use of the wonderful social services we have in town?
No, I've been living here since 1979. I was a student here. I've worked here part-time. I've worked for the city at a couple different jobs. I went to UCSC, I became homeless for the first time really just a few years ago. I had a place to live last year for a while. I worked taking care of an elderly woman for a few months, and actually found a full-time job, and then found I was not able to, I didn't have the energy. I couldn't keep doing these two jobs at the same time, and I don't want to go into more details about that, but my family sort of turned their backs on me when I didn't want to leave a boyfriend of mine alone, staying at the shelter, trying to get his life together. My family wanted me to turn away from him, and I didn't want to leave him with no one to even call to say, I'm having a bad day, you know, can I talk to you? And so I lost the support of my family over not wanting to leave him isolated and alone, and...
You're not a person without skills. In other words, can you name some of the skills, some kind of jobs you've had?
Yeah, I've worked with children as a teacher's aide. I'm bilingual. I used to teach second graders Spanish and English and reading and writing and math. I'm trying to stay a little bit anonymous, or anomalous, as you put it. I am anomalous. So I'm not going to go into a lot of details, but I've worked for the city in other capacities as a bilingual employee.
Working for organizations like different commissions, or possibly part of the library, or possibly part of some city hall job.
Something like that, yeah.
We're trying to maintain your anonymity here. I can vouch for the fact you did, in fact, work in at least one of those positions, because I saw you there.
Yeah, you did. I worked at a bookstore way back when I was at Cabrillo.
Is it more difficult to get a job now than it was, say, a year or two ago? Or is it more difficult for you personally? Are you one of those problem people because of a drug problem or an alcohol problem or a mental illness problem, or you're just plain rebellious? That, you know, is the latest way of describing people who are outside. It's not really a housing problem. It's a problem that requires case management. You need to be, you know, they need to pay a lot of people to help get you out of the situation, a lot of support services. So, you know, it's sort of a classy deal to get you out. It's going to cost a lot of money. You have to build a community house that will, cost $600 a month for you to live in, and get all kinds of caseworkers around there helping you out. It's not going to be like... You need to have your money managed. You have to learn how to write checks.
Yeah.
Is that you?
No, it isn't. I do suffer from depression. I have since I was 14. I was diagnosed then, and I have gone through mental health services through their little hamster wheel here, it looks like to me. The best they could offer me was to stay at the shelter and go to a day program, which emphasized drug and alcohol treatment. And I raised my hand. I am Zena, and I like drugs, okay? I like them, but I don't like them all the time. I like them the way other people like to have a drink on the weekend. I actually, alcohol is not one of my favorite things. I do smoke cigarettes. I guess I would say my main addiction is to cigarettes and coffee. As far as other substances, I don't have a craving. I don't have to have them. And I really don't need a drug treatment program. I'm also from a religious background that I feel really persecuted by. The only available drug programs are very, in my opinion, Christian-based. And they say they're spiritual, they're not religious, but everyone says the Lord's Prayer at the end of meetings, and that really rubs me the wrong way because I wasn't raised with Christianity and the Lord's Prayer. And to me, it feels like it's really promoting a religion. And also, there's no alternative programs. I think there ought to be alternatives to the anonymous style programs, because there certainly must be other programs that work. And certainly, I've heard many stories of people who've been through programs that didn't work, because they've been through them over and over and over again, and they relapse and they relapse.
But that's because they're bad people, right, Zira?
I think that these are people who are in pain. Sometimes they are maybe rebellious people. I think you do have to be a little bit rebellious to say, hey, I'm going to pursue pleasure, even though it's against the law. I think there's a variety of reasons why people make the choices they do. In my personal opinion, a lot of problems would be solved if a lot of illegal substances were made legal, because they're victimless crimes, and they wouldn't be as expensive. People wouldn't become involved in theft to support habits, and we wouldn't be filling the jails and the prisons up with people who haven't committed any other crime than to pursue pleasure. Pursuit of happiness, doesn't that ring a bell? I think this is a right that somebody came up with way back when. So anyway, what the one point I wanted to make about that was that when I sought help with my possible mental health problem, it may be the case that my depression is a garden variety, and since I refuse to take any more antidepressants after having had side effects from them that made me less functional and able to work than I am when I'm just depressed. I've always worked depressed. When I've worked before, I was depressed, and antidepressants make me dysfunctional.
Are you depressed right now?
Yeah. I actually am depressed right now, and here I am interviewing with you.
Completely incoherent, I might add.
Yeah. So I was a bit dismayed and shocked to find that when people like myself seek help with the problems we're having, a problem that doesn't really exist is being addressed very, what's the word I'm looking for here? Stringently, strongly, they push you into going to these religious-based programs to treat an addiction, and very little attention is put on any kind of therapy or help with, you know, whether I might have been misdiagnosed when I was 14. You know, why do I feel suicidal? You know, what are the social problems that contribute to someone like myself feeling the way I do about this world, that I'm not valued and wanted, even though I have skills and abilities, even though I can work, even though I'm a person that tries to be caring of other people sometimes, and when I try to do that, it ends up causing things to be more difficult for me. I see a lot of other people who are like that, and maybe the answer is that nobody should care anymore. Maybe everybody should be out for number one. Maybe, you know,
This homeless Santa Cruz life, or maybe just this Santa Cruz life, seems to be getting to you, kind of eroding your faith in your fellow human beings.
Yeah, I can't say I ever had a whole lot of faith in human beings, but yeah, the more I see people sort of just passing the buck with the problems, and people getting upset and angry, I think, about a lot of the realities of the world that don't have to be the way they are. I think often the anger is turned on each other, or it's a frightening thing to be angry and express your anger directly at the person who holds power over you. But I would really like to see a lot of people get together and say, hey, we're angry, we know exactly what we're angry about, and we're going to express that anger directly in a group, strength in numbers, to the people that are continuing to hold power and make the wrong decisions with the power they have. The wrong decisions about what the policies are, the wrong decisions about what to do about the problem, the wrong decisions about whether to repeal laws that are probably unconstitutional and at least are causing misery for people. I think a good idea would be to open one of the state parks for legal camping and not, you know, prohibitively expensive camping for homeless people who are now camping in the woods risking tickets. When the earthquake happened, it was a disaster. They put pavilion tents up in the parking lots downtown, you know, taking away parking spaces for those precious cars that everybody wants to drive, so the businesses could survive. Well, okay, the businesses make profit, and I can see why the city had an interest in that. They want to keep the downtown alive. Well, how about keeping people alive? How about letting people not slowly suffer and eventually die earlier because they're disabled and they're out in a tent in the woods in the cold, and if they make a fire, the smoke's going to be seen by the rangers and they're going to get busted and they're not going to have a place to live anymore. How about taking care of the people? How about putting up tents for people, not just the armory? You know, the armory is, as I haven't been there myself, I've heard about it from people who've been there. I know a man who has been in need of shelter, but has a congenital problem with his bones and muscles, and he cannot sleep on a cement cold floor. It's bad for his health to sleep on a cement cold floor, and that's what I hear. And when, you know, in your interview with Rockin, he says, well, there's always a bed available. There's not a bed, like you said. There is a cement floor that probably has a little extra space. The shelter always has a list that people are now waiting on that list and have been waiting for a few weeks to get on that list, and maybe they'll get in this week, you know, maybe they'll get in next week.
I've always suggested people can, you know, kind of hold off on their need to sleep, possibly until after the next election in November. I mean, it may or may not be legal after November, so keep waiting, and eventually you will have an opportunity to sleep. you know, it's interesting. Something you were saying was reminding me, and of course now the thought has flown. Yeah, hopefully it will come back. You yourself have you slept in vehicles? You've slept outside. What are you going to do when your current? I guess you're allowed 30 days in the shelter. Then what happens? This is 30 days for what? A total of about 32, 34 people.
Yeah, about that.
Out of a homeless population of 500 to 1,500 people, of course, who are outside, and the armory, I guess, can take care of up to about 100 to 150 of them, and churches maybe 30 or 40 more, or sometimes more than that, but again, we're talking like less than a fifth, and this is only in the winter months, and in the summer months, there's no armory, and it drops to about 30 to 50 people a night have legal places to sleep. We've been through all this before. I remember what I was going to say. Your interesting discussion of how they can find tents and shelter for businesses, it actually goes a little further than that when there's a real emergency like the earthquake. In Santa Cruz, I don't know if you remember, during the earthquake, they were arresting homeless people who tried to not even put up tents, but who tried to sleep outside the Civic Center Auditorium, which was the emergency shelter then after the 1989 earthquake, took them to jail. Helen Langley, Judith Beiner, Linda Edwards were all taken to jail. I'm sorry.
That's another form of shelter. I have heard comments made by people who, you know, well, worst comes to worst, they can commit a crime and go to jail and have, you know, three hots and a cot. I mean, nobody really wants to be in jail, but I think there are times when people do go ahead and risk being taken to jail, because being taken to jail is not going to be a whole lot worse than being out in the rain.
Well, that's certainly true to some extent, although a lot of people have a real serious fear of the police, and you don't get three hots in the cot, for instance, if you get arrested. You get three hots in the cot if you get incarcerated, which is somewhat different, because many times they will hold you in this cold holding cell where you get to wear only one layer of clothing. You're probably familiar with that.
Yeah, there was a woman in there who had on a pair of shorts. It had been warm in the daytime, it was evening, and she asked for a blanket, and they wouldn't give her a blanket, and we were in there for many hours. I had been falsely arrested because I had been hit by my boyfriend. Another person who had called the police when he heard me scream decided to help my boyfriend keep from going to jail. My boyfriend was black and the witness was black. So the witness told the police that I was kicking the shit out of this man who is an ex-Marine and has a brown belt in judo. I've had a
wife. You haven't taken up with this guy again, have you?
No, I'm not with him at the moment. But in any event, here's a situation of a domestic violence. I didn't want him to go to jail, but I wanted to walk away and not have to be around him. The police decided to take me to jail, and I told them they were doing the wrong thing. It was dismissed a week later. But this is my one time, you know, I know what you're talking about when you talk about those holding cells, and I was not put in general population, but I was there for 3 days. So I have some idea of what it is like to be there. But that's another danger for women out there. You know, sometimes you're a woman, you're alone, you meet a guy. It might seem that it's a little safer to hook up with a man, because the other men leave you alone. If they see you with a man, they say, oh, she's his girlfriend. And depending on how tough the guy you're with looks, the tougher the better, in a way. You're a little bit safer. But then, who's going to protect you from him? And are the police going to protect you from him? Well, no. If somebody, anyone else, any of his friends say she hit him first, they may very well take you to jail instead of taking him.
Yeah, indeed. And so we see that a particular situation for women, but also the point I was making, of course, was that there's no shelter in jail unless you actually, you know, are going to stay there for weeks and weeks. Which I talked to someone who said that was a policy he actually used, but it's very rare that people use that kind of approach. You don't get fed. Medical attention is minimal. As we know, a man recently died in jail. There's been, you know, suicide rates are way up. It's not much, not only is it not much fun, but it can be kind of grim in our local jails. We're going to hear later today later on the show, how even currently at the present time in Santa Monica, an activist down there, Jennifer Wagoner, is trying to get human rights abuses against homeless people documented and get the armories opened again. Apparently they were shunted aside for use in this Iraqi military venture that Clinton was planning, old Weenie Wagger Clinton, as we call him, to kind of distract attention from his domestic affairs, so to speak. And there is a real discrepancy between how homeless people are treated and how, say, upper middle class citizens in distress are treated, and it's really kind of a grim situation. But you were going to say something.
Oh no.
Okay. You tuned, in case you're interested and want to know what's going on here, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre, Robert Morris, and I have with me the anonymous and anonymous Zira, who's Zina. Yeah, boy, you got to get that name right. Thank you, Zina. So, Zina, any more you want to tell us about the situation of a person who's, well, you've been homeless on and off for the last 6 months. You also have had some contact with friends who have been drug users and had some particular experiences around that. Did you want to talk about that at all?
No, actually, one other thing I thought was important to discuss, something that's concerned me. Since yesterday, there was a woman staying at the shelter who's pregnant and who seems to be a little out of touch with reality, created a disturbance in the dorm, was told by staff that if she persisted in causing disturbance, she'd be asked to leave. I personally didn't care to have her around because she was making accusations against people. She was, for example, calling me a dyke. I have nothing against dykes, but I'm recovering from the loss of the death of a boyfriend I was very much in love with. Really have no interest in this young woman sexually, and she was very homophobic and saying a lot of homophobic things. So she wasn't making herself very popular with the fairly, you know, homo-friendly people in the dorm. I'm not going to speculate on anybody's sexual preferences there, but it looks like most of us are fairly straight. So, in any event,
she's having sort of a paranoid reaction to the scene.
Paranoid and talking to herself and then starting to make noise at night, you know, while we're trying to sleep, talking loudly. And it was a problem disturbing the sleep, but it's also a problem that she's obviously in need of some kind of medical psychiatric attention. I really didn't want to see her kicked out. But then where could she go besides the shelter?
Certainly. Fresno, perhaps.
Fresno? What's in Fresno?
Well, the rents are cheaper there. That's what we're always told by those who criticize the sleeping there. Perhaps Capitola. They always, Mike Rodkin has suggested that the activists wander over to Capitola and start protesting there.
Hmm. Well, anyway, she decided to leave before being asked to leave. She just decided she was going to leave. last night, I asked her if she wanted some change to make a phone call. She said she wouldn't need to make a phone call. I don't know. Someone asked her where if she had somewhere to go. She said no. She didn't know where she was going. So I'm hoping she's okay today. But you know, here's an example of a woman. She's pregnant. She left the shelter. Of course, we're free to do that, you know, which is probably a good thing. But out there, a little out of touch with reality, and I don't know where she is, don't know where she's gone, and there should be a better situation for her than a shelter. There should be more medical attention for her.
And I think
it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing to have this woman out there alone at night. I don't know where she's.
Yeah, I know that when we had a campground operating, although there were many complaints for the Coral Street Open Air Shelter back in 1994-95, and I certainly was one of the complainers, at least there was sort of an area where people could go to fairly easily, unless you ran afoul of the kind of inner network of, well, there were sort of a network of thugs that controlled the campground to some extent for a while there, but then things got better as campers themselves organized. You could go there, you could leave your stuff during the day, you could, you know, blow up, leave, come back. Whereas once you get caught into this kind of bureaucracy, where you have to get on a waiting list and prove yourself to three different bureaucrats and fill out 16 forms, it really, you know, it's dumpster time, really, is what it looks like. You get the dumpsters and the bridges, and of course you sleep under the bridges these days.
By a dumpster. You can't even sit and eat cookies next to a dumpster. You're trespassing.
Yeah, not only that, but if you reach into a dumpster, according to...
I would imagine you'd be stealing in that case.
Well, not only would you be stealing, but Officer Over apparently feels that the crime is sufficiently important to pull his gun, as he did in, I guess it was August the last year, according to two homeless men I spoke to. So you have a kind of a gauntlet to run if you're a homeless person in Santa Cruz. We're going to take a musical break now briefly, so we can take a breather. And we'll be back with myself and...
Zena.
And Zena, yes, Zena. Not the real name of this person, but certainly a fine name for the purposes of the show. And I hope you stay with us on Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, 96.3 FM.
This is definitely the highway that's the best. Somebody can move it. Look there. There goes Mr. Miller. And he won't be screaming. He tells Mr. Severantino. And I heard he's got a good price for it.
Sounds like dead air, folks. Your Free Radio Santa Cruz is hoping to have a tape shortly for you. This is Bathrobe's Pierre Robert on the March 8th edition, 1998, of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're soon to have an in-studio guest as well, hoping to have David Silva with us shortly. In the meantime, let's turn to an interview with one of our more outspoken folks, man who's good on the streets at all times, and good on the guitar as well, Skidmark Bob Duran. First an interview, however, with Pat the Panhandler to set the scene. We're talking to a man who just got a panhandling ticket.
Not too much.
Are we talking about an abusive panhandling ticket, or?
That's what they said.
And what's your perception of the situation? Were you hostile and nasty, and did you follow someone? Were you threatening?
Nope. Just standing there.
And what did you ask?
Spare change for coffee. Thank you, have a nice day.
And for that, they searched all your pockets.
Well, I've got a search clause, so that they can do that.
I see. Well, you took it in very good humor, I must say.
Yep. Cops. Can't live with them and you can't shoot them.
Nicely put. Is this your first panhandling ticket on the mall?
Mm-hmm.
And can I take a look at it?
What's that?
Can I see it? Yeah. I want to see what code section they're charging.
040.
I mean, that's the city code's downtown ordinance against... I think it's, I'm not sure which section of the panhandling law that is. It could be your location, it could
manners
be...
Manners with panhandler.
Can you read that word?
Manners.
Oh, manners. Mm-hmm. You mean you weren't mannerly enough from their perspective? Or? Was this observed by a police officer, or was there a complaint filed by somebody?
No, they heard me, so...
And did they offer you any spare change?
Nope.
Well, here, let me make up for that. It's March 8th, 1998. It's about 2010, actually. We're about to call Bob Duran. On the line with Cop Watcher radio personality and just all-around bad boy, as well as musician extraordinaire, Skidmark Bob.
Hi,
Skidmark.
Me.
And Bob, you gave me a call last night, Saturday night the 7th, with some interesting news about the levee right behind University Copy of Front Street?
Yeah, it's a target mainly for... Well, of course, if anybody knows anything at all, there's some drug dealing that happens there on the levee. And the neighborhood enforcement team was out doing drug stings. I believe they had two officers, two of the Latino Mexican officers. I guess they call them the Beach Boys. They're out there in plainclothes selling, either selling or buying, one of the two. And they would just pick people up left and right. I don't know how many they arrested, but it was several people they arrested that asked for more cuffs and had to ask. They had officers on the side, Officer Medina and Officer Carey, just waiting as pickups, and they would just call them in. I need a pickup, so then they'd roll in, grab the guy, and take him down to...
That's Killer Carey we're talking about?
Killer Carey, yeah, he was there. And they would transport them to over in the Beach Flats area by the boardwalk, or they would transport them to the downtown office or to a van awaiting somewhere and load them up. I'm not sure how many arrests there were. I'm going to find out more about that. But, yeah, and then that team has been doing it. CNET's been very active lately. I think it's because of the change of the weather and all that kind of thing. So more people are coming into town. The NET team was also down at the Metro doing surveillance on the bus terminal itself, because I think there was some kind of transactions going on there. Although I don't know if any arrests were made there, but they were surveying it very hardly. And that happened was Friday, I believe. And as well as CNET has been out doing their little number.
Now, what's the difference, Bob, between CNET and the NET team?
Well, there really isn't when they work together, because they always work together. But CNET stands for County Narcotics Enforcement Team, and NET stands for Neighborhood Enforcement Team, which is mainly the Santa Cruz City police officers. CNET is county officers, but they always intertwine and work together for the good of the drug war, I'm sure.
Now, has the Resource Center for Nonviolence, with its new grant from the U.S. Department of Justice, signed on to help, shall we say, rid the area of drugs and drug dealers and poor people selling drugs? Yeah, we were talking about the $15,000 grant that the Resource Center got, I guess, from the U.S. Department of Justice to mingle with the police or whatever?
Yeah, something like that. I kind of find it funny that a so-called Gandhian group it would go to the police to get money. Seems like they'd be able to write a grant for something else. But then again, I guess that's why Eric Larson's on there.
What is your reading about Eric Larson? Do you think he's still going to run for city council, Bob?
Oh, I'm sure he'll be the great white hope of the Beach Bus. No doubt about that. He's also, you know, he's also making criminal people that are doing things like prostitution and even, yes, drug dealing to get by. I mean, there's no jobs in this town, and it's not doing anything to create jobs. He's going around trying to get his support. And, there's a lot of controversy between him and Doug Rand of the Resource Center for Nonviolence as well. But, that means, you know, there's going to be more increased drug net activity down in that area. And the NET team and CNET, which are already very, very active right now, right around this time they start becoming active again. They work like 3 or 4 days out of the week. And they get paid extremely large amounts of money just to bust people that are selling like maybe $20 worth of marijuana or, you know, a small amount, rather than going after the big fish, I guess.
Now, you know, it's interesting. In the old days, of course, you recently, it's not so old, but several months ago, you were busted in San Lorenzo Park for simply acting as a news reporter observing a police sting because you had a scanner on you. And of course, that whole business, as we learned from a past interview with you, resulted eventually in after you being jailed and so forth, and after much extensive inquiry and hassle getting back your scanner and getting charges dropped. But if you attempted, let's say, to observe this thing that happened last night, this bust along the riverside, wouldn't you have been in violation of the new closing ordinance, which makes it illegal for people to be anywhere on the levee unless they're walking straight through during the dark hours?
Unless I was walking straight through, then I'd probably, but they would probably try to arrest me for resisting, since I've been threatened by that, by CNET and that team, that if I ever did come in the middle of any of their operations, even though I'm not interfering, I will be arrested and charged with 148 resisting, obstructing, delaying.
And you, in fact, were charged with that last time, but that charge was not filed, right?
Yeah, it was never filed by Archie Weber, the DA, and also 636.5, which is using a scanner in compliance with the crime, which that crime was 148.
Now, you're quite a notorious criminal. For instance, most recently, you've been seen having a stolen milk crate on your bicycle. Is that not a fact?
Oh, yeah. Well, Sergeant Butchie Baker, in all his infinite wisdom and in crime prevention, they were spending the day out on looking around for homeless people that had shopping carts. and rounding up the shopping carts, as well as the homeless people, and citing them for having stolen property. And so I took a picture of this when they were behind Lighthouse Liquors. That was about, a month ago. And I took a picture of that and then, you know, rode on my merry way. And next thing you know, there's Butch Baker behind me.
Milk crate charge, are you now going to court on that one?
566 of the penal code, and it's under the dairy product code or whatever. If you have a milk container that says Cal Reg on it, or registered in California, it can even have the name on it, but it has to say Reg Cal on it, then you could be in charge of a misdemeanor of having stolen property, which everybody I know has a milk crate or so that they use for something. You just find them lying around, or you find them at the bargain barn or swap meet or what have you. And everybody uses them, and they're everywhere. But it is against the law. So
you are now facing up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. When is your court hearing on that?
Let me see. I got hearing on the 24th of March.
And what time?
8:30 in the morning for arraignment.
In what department?
I don't know.
Okay.
Find out when I get there.
So that's Bob Duran in at 8:30 on March 24th. For those of you who want to be present at the arraignment, though, usually, in fact, we don't even know if you're going to be arraigned. In the past, they've dropped such charges even before arraignment, right?
Yeah, they like to, you know, arrest me and throw me in jail and kind of try to scare me or something like that. And then when I go to court, it happens all the time. I don't know how many times I've been charged. I got like pages upon pages of charges, but they've never, the DA just laughs at it. It's like, no way am I going to be able to prosecute this person on these, even disturbing the peace charges for playing music on the mall, you know, all those kinds of things that they've tried to do. The police go out of their way to try to silence me or what have you. And it always comes up, it always comes up that the DA just doesn't take it seriously as well.
Now, you also been reporting at one point, I guess a month ago, on the police seizing shopping carts from homeless people. Have you seen this practice continuing? Has it abated? Any update on that?
No, from what I understand, it was just that one day that they came in. Actually had to do with Sergeant Baker, and I think Officer House had something to do with it. And they went around the police van and found homeless people with carts and stopped them and cited them and took their shopping carts away. And the funny thing about it is that I went over to Long's where the shopping carts were from, and I asked them if they had a complaint, if they made a complaint that there are too many of them disappearing. They're all, no, not that I know of. I go, okay. Next thing you know, I see Officer Howell pull in with the police van with all the shopping carts. So I went over to Officer Howell. I said, excuse me, isn't that evidence for a court trial? Aren't you supposed to hold on to it? And he says, well, it's somebody else's property. And I said, well, yeah, it's still evidence. You're supposed to hold on to it and put it in your evidence room. And he just said, have a nice day.
How many shopping carts were there?
Huh?
How many carts were there?
He took a couple of trips there, so there must have been about three or five of them. They weren't doing a whole lot of it. I mean, it's not everybody has one here in Santa Cruz.
I talked to a man who we're also doing an interview with today on Free Radio Santa Cruz, who has got a panhandling ticket.
Uh-huh.
I'm hearing more about panhandling tickets on the mall. Have you been hearing much about that?
Well, I got one myself over the Xmas holidays by Officer Richards.
And what exactly was your panhandling crime? Were you, should we say, collaring helpless women and roughing them up, demanding money?
No, I happened to notice this black man getting a ticket for just standing there and asking for change, and they gave him a ticket. And he wasn't doing anything. He wasn't sitting on public property. He wasn't, you know, in front of a window. And they just gave him a ticket. And then, so I made the mistake of sitting at a planner and asking for change for this man's defense once. And so then Officer Richards came over and gave me a ticket. And first he wrote down the wrong section. He wrote down the misdemeanor charge. And then later he corrected it through a court memorandum and gave me the sitting on public property and asking for change.
And what happened to that charge?
Well, I went to trial, and I've been trying to get a hold of the panhandling case that happened in Los Angeles, which I've tried and tried and tried and couldn't get it in time because some of it's not in print yet. And so I tried to tell, well, actually I was supposed to go in front of Commissioner Cloud. Well, mysteriously, Judge Stevens comes in and says, I'll take this case. And so I had to go to his courtroom, and I tried to explain to him that I need more time to get a hold of this case, and he said denied. So then I had to go through with the trial, and then I tried to explain that, you know, it says any other public property in the law, so basically anywhere I go is, and ask for change, is illegal, which is wrong. For one thing, it's obstruction of my freedom of speech, and of course Judge Stevens didn't see that way and just said guilty, $135.
And so you're doing community service on that?
Yes, I did.
How many hours?
Well, first he said he denied me community service. I guess he really hates me. I've never had him before as a judge. But he denied me community service. So I put myself back on calendar, went back to Judge to Cloud, and she let me do community service. So that's like 27 hours, something like that.
27 hours for a $135 fine?
Yeah, for asking for change.
Are you serious? I thought it was, wow.
It's like in there, 27, 21 hours, something like that.
That's quite a number of hours.
Which cost me 20-something dollars to do. And then I get to spend my time, you know, doing community service, which I've already done, and do with free radio and other things too.
Now, are you still on probation from the Campbell Street situation?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
And for those who don't remember, this was a case where individuals were evicted from their house by slumlords who refused to pay them relocation fees that they had to get from, ironically, the same Judge Stevens, right?
No. Yeah, Judge Stevens. Yeah, it wasn't the same judge, though. Wait, what did I say it was Judge Stevens?
Yes, you did.
Maybe it was, okay, I said the wrong judge.
Okay, I guess
judge.
Stevens has been kind of good and bad, but not uniformly bad. And I guess Commissioner Cloud does like you, although her treatment of other sleeping ban cases, for instance, has been utterly horrible.
Yeah.
So it's interesting you have a good relationship with Cloud. I want to hear the inside skivvy on this, if you can, possibly in a more adult section where we don't have children listening.
Yeah, you should talk to V-Man about that.
I see.
That's another story.
Ooh.